Hello and welcome to this week's episode of Mind Your Subconscious. This week is all about resilience. And I've had the perfect guest to speak about resilience with because she's also a 3-5 in her human design. And if you know about this, you know that us 3 lions, fuck, we have to have a lot of resilience. And this is how me and Mel originally connected. And in the first half of the podcast, you will hear all about the resilience that Mel had to build in the first part of her life, so to say, because she was with an abusive ex. They have been homeless. She has been into sex work. She has been addicted and she's been sexually assaulted. And there were loads of other things that have happened to her that were very, very traumatizing. And then in the second half of the podcast, we switch. We talk about where Mel is now, where she's today, and how she changed her life. Like, what was that pivotal moment that made her change? And what did it take for her to completely change her life around to where she now lives in her dream apartment with her dream partner, doing her dream work and her soul's work? This is a very, very vulnerable interview. I hope you enjoyed as much as I did and enjoy the conversation now. Hello, everybody. Today, I'm here with Mel from Helographic. And Mel, why don't you go ahead and introduce yourself and start with your story a little bit, not so much of like what you do, but your story first. And then we go into what you do because it plays like nicely into that.
I grew up with parents who were very old school. My mom was never really shown motherly love. So even though she didn't want to repeat what her mother did with her, she never had an example of, you know, how it is to be a mother and love your child and care for a child. And so I didn't really have the most caring parenting growing up. My parents both wanted me to be the best because they wanted me to have a bright future. But in that sense, they also forgot to accept that I was a human child with, you know, emotions and flaws and struggles like we all are. And So they raised me with a lot of tough love. And there was also the fact that my mother did not receive the attention she wanted as a child. And so there was this sense of constant competition between us. Like, she always needed to be the center of attention. And so there wasn't really any space for my emotions. There wasn't really any space for me to, you know, struggle as well. And all of this obviously taught me certain things about the kind of love I deserved. And surprise, surprise, I ended up in a relationship with a very abusive partner who I was with for 3 years and who was in many ways a lot like my mother. And treating me a lot like her. In many ways, very different, but in many ways, just could not bear me having emotions and just, wanted me to be the people pleaser, which I grew up to be. And for the longest time, I didn't realize that there was something wrong, mostly because, first of all, it was my first time being in a long-term relationship with a woman back then. I'm pansexual, so I like people, don't care about gender or whatever. But it was my first time being in a long-term relationship with a woman. And because of that, I didn't think that it was possible for, you know, I didn't realize that it was possible for a woman to be abusive to another woman in that way, which is kind of odd. But whenever we picture domestic violence, we always imagine a man being violent towards a woman when actually, it can come from any side. But for the longest time, I didn't realize that something was wrong. And I became very isolated. She would get very angry whenever I would want to see my friends. So I stopped seeing my friends. And she made me realize a lot of things that happened in my childhood, which then isolated me from my family as well, from my parents. And I had mental health issues as well, which in the beginning she seemed very accepting of, but then she started using against me, in the sense of, I was diagnosed with borderline personality disorder, and she would use that against me, as in, like, oh, I'm the only one who understand it, you're crazy, like nobody would ever want to deal with you. And she would even encourage my toxic behaviors at times. As in, one of the ways that I developed, one of the unhealthy coping mechanisms I developed over the years because I didn't know how to process my emotions, was self-harm. And she would actually encourage that in a very toxic way. I don't think I've ever actually opened up about that online, but the expression banging your head against the walls, like when your brain is too much. I started taking that literally. And I would actually do that because I wanted my brain to stop. I wanted my emotions to stop. I just wanted everything to stop and go quiet and go calm. And she started encouraging that in a very toxic way, at one point. And then, it started with just verbal abuse, and then it escalated. To death threats and to throwing things at me, and then making it sound like it was nothing. That one day she threw a desk chair at me, like right next to me, and then she would make it sound like, oh, I threw it next to you. It was nothing because I threw it next to you. I would never hurt you. And I'm like, well, you did try to strangle me the other day, or you did push me and make me fall against a radiator. I still have a scar on my back from that day when she pushed me against and I fell against a radiator. And for the longest time, I just thought that it wasn't a big deal. And also, she never left any visible marks on me. And sometimes, words hurt more than physical punches or wounds, and obviously that doesn't leave any mark either. And so nobody saw it. Nobody knew that I was in that situation because I was keeping it together. And apart from my therapist, nobody knew. And even after we broke up, nobody believed me. People have this vision of domestic violence as like women with black eyes. And yeah.
Can I ask, like, in just interject here in between, because I know that was the case for me. Like, when you were in that, because you didn't have any physical marks, would you, like, let's in quote unquote not remember it, or would you just remember the positive things and focus on the positive things and really be just engaged in, whatever has kept your relationship together?
Totally. Yeah. I convinced myself that she was the best thing that ever happened to me because she, weirdly enough, she's the one who introduced me to spirituality and spiritual growth in a way. She introduced me to alternative ways of healing, like mushrooms and ayahuasca, and we went on ayahuasca retreats together, and we had also, she introduced me to other things like the idea of twin flames. I don't know if you've heard about that. And they say twin flames are the most chaotic relationships. And so she would justify that. And I thought, oh, that's it. Because we are twin flames, this is a very challenging relationship, but it will bring the most growth and it will like lead me to know who I truly am. And, this is where I'm meant to be, and like I'm gonna be with this person forever. And I actually had a chat with a psychic medium I work with at times, and she was telling me twin flames are not necessarily meant to last forever. Once you have learned what you were meant to learn, sometimes you can let go. And that was so validating for me because I thought I was realizing my highest spiritual self in that relationship, and actually there was no me at all. There was no me at all. I took on her dreams. I started eating only the foods that she liked and that she approved of, only be friends with her friends, even then friend. And her mindset overall was just very toxic. There was just, I'm not gonna say there was nothing good about it because obviously everything that happens happens for a reason and we always learn and grow from experiences. But it was time for me to get out because there was nothing else that was good to get out of it. But yes, in the moment, and I would even defend her. In my therapy session, I would like tell my therapist, oh, this happened. And then she would be like, that's messed up. I mean, in therapist words. And I would be like, yes, but she's really trying. And then she apologized. And then, she's working on herself. And she also has borderline. And, she has paranoia and all that. And we are growing together. And yeah.
And what was the moment for you? Because you mentioned homelessness. Like, what was the moment where you became homeless? Like, bring us up to that moment. What happened here?
Okay, so I have to go back a little bit in time for that. So when I first moved to London, I was working in the film industry as a camera assistant, and I thought that was going to be my career. I was really passionate about it. I loved it so much. And so I thought, let me move to London because there are more opportunities there. And I did a master's in film production and I did my internship from the end of my master's. I did my internship in London in a rental company that was renting out camera equipment, lighting equipment. And that went really well. And so I went back to France, and then a year later, I wanted to come back to London and like try to grow a career in the film industry. And I thought to myself, let me get in touch with that company and see if they can hire me part-time so I can, have a little bit of income and at the same time be in the industry and meet people, and start building my network and start working on film shoots at the same time. Which they did, and I went back, and for a year it was going really well, and I was really, really good at my job. I was a really good camera technician there. I was very passionate, very hardworking, and getting along with everyone. And even though I was the youngest employee and the only woman there, I kind of fit in because I was a bit of a tomboy. But I was fitting in just fine. And Then some crazy shit happened where I started seeing the shadow side of that company, where the director of the company was a very dodgy person who had a lot of debts. And one day he decided to try and get the insurance to pay out some money to help them financially. Obviously, we didn't know that. That's something that I realized afterwards, but. And so he made some very expensive equipment disappear from the shelves and then proceeded to, instead of reporting it to the police, hire a private investigator and submit all of the staff to a polygraph test, a lie detector test, which is not even receivable in court and also kind of illegal in a way, but I didn't know. And he was like, "Oh, if you refuse to take the test, we will have to let you go because the insurance company cannot insure us if we have people we don't trust," or some bullshit. Anyways, I was young, so I did it. And they ended up framing the driver for it. We had a very amazing driver from Romania who was very hardworking and also started a side hustle, so started making some money. But still, he was really sweet to everyone, like working really hard, loved by everyone. But suddenly they turned on him. I'm not sure exactly what happened, but they decided to frame him. Nobody, like when the police finally got involved, they didn't find anything. They never found where the equipment went or who stole it. But anyways, they blame it on him, ended up firing him, and hired a new driver who was younger and a douchebag. Excuse my French. And that driver, for some reason, decided that it was appropriate to disrespect me, and he started just sexually harassing me and making comments and never calling me by my name. Instead, it was always sexy, even in front of clients. He would come and say, "Hey, sexy," and like he would touch me in inappropriate ways and all of that, which happened in front of my colleagues, in front of my manager, in front of my boss, and nobody was saying anything. Nobody seemed bothered by it. And I kind of put up with it for a while, but my mental health started declining very quickly. And you know what happens when your mental health starts declining? Your immune system also follows. So I started getting sick all the time and missing work because of being sick, and just because of my mental health in general. I developed anxiety. I would go and cry in the toilet until one day, my manager and my boss called me in for a meeting. They were like, "What is going on? You don't seem like yourself anymore. You're like missing work and calling in sick all the time." And so I told them what was going on. And they fired me. And from that moment on, it was downhill. I fell into really bad depression, developed extreme anxiety. I was having like 10 extreme panic attacks every day. I couldn't go outside. I couldn't eat. I wasn't a functioning human being anymore. And one thing leading to another, I couldn't work anymore, couldn't really take care of myself, and so ended up without income. So I was sharing a room in a house share with my partner at the time, and we couldn't afford the rent anymore because she wasn't really working. She didn't believe in working. And instead, she was like, you know what? I'm about to turn 30. I've always wanted to go travel, and you're not okay. So let's go travel. Great idea, right? We didn't have a lot of money. So her idea was, oh, you know that money that your granddad left you when he passed? Let's use that and go travel around the world. And because I couldn't think for myself, I was like, okay, let's do it. And so we ended up going traveling on the cheap, which, you know, traveling builds character, and we saw a lot of beautiful places. And I'm grateful for that. But also, when you're mentally unstable, traveling on the cheap and not knowing where you're going to sleep the next day is very hard. So I wasn't okay through that all. Kind of fell into kind of fell into sex work, to make some money, which obviously was also very damaging for me. Some people do it from an empowered place. I did not. I was doing it from pressure from my partner, and also from the need to make money. Yeah, from there we spent all the money I had left and came back to London and stayed in squats with some of her friends, and also stayed at some her best friend's house, who gave us you know, the floor of the living room. I was never street homeless, but I didn't have house keys for a year and a half, and the places I stayed weren't very conducive to healing and growth. And some of these places were very conducive to me using drugs. So there was that. But yeah, that's how I ended up homeless in so many
And
words.
so these are a lot of things that happened like around, you know, a few years, and it seemed to have been getting worse and worse and worse and worse. So when would you say was the moment, or what was the situation where you said, okay, I can no longer do this. Like, I need something that needs to change. Like, what was that moment where you had this like, fuck all of this. Like, I need to change. Something needs to happen.
Yeah, so there was, I think, two decisive moments in that journey. The first one was when we were staying at the squat. I had gotten like into like daily drug usage. My mostly my my drugs of choice were weed and codeine. Codeine mostly because it would take all my feelings away, which was amazing. And by that time, I had stopped drinking because my partner made it, gave me, what's the word? An ultimatum that I had to stop drinking. She was into drugs, but drinking was not okay for some reason for her. And alcohol was my primary addiction, but I stopped cold feet, and my addiction transferred to something else, obviously, because I never got the support or help that I needed. Anyways, we were staying in that squat, and there was a dealer, and it was very convenient for me to get the drugs I needed. I was high all the time because I couldn't handle just not being high. I couldn't handle having emotions and feelings at that time. And then one day I ran out of drugs and the dealer wasn't there. I went to knock on the door and he was in there. And I had a nervous breakdown, like a huge nervous breakdown. Like I thought I was losing my mind. And it was in the evening that happened. I thought to myself, I'm never going to be able to sleep. There was a party going on outside, lots of people high and some very loud music. And I was losing my mind. I wasn't okay. And that night, I decided something needs to change because I don't even know how to describe it. It felt like my head was going to explode because I couldn't handle it. And I decided something needs to change. And I decided the next day I would go to an AA meeting, Alcoholics Anonymous. I decided to go with Alcoholics Anonymous because it was my primary addiction. And I was like, I need some help. I didn't want to go to rehab or anything like that. And I don't even know how I decided to do that. It's just that time is very blurry in my head. But I remember that I made the decision that the next day I would go to a meeting. And I went to a meeting and I talked to people and I got some phone numbers. And then people told me you need to go to a meeting every day until it gets better and easier. You need to find a sponsor and, like, make sure you start building a community of people who can support you in that way. And that was the beginning of my sobriety. But also, one of the things that happens is everything I was blocking out from the alcohol and drugs all came back. So that was also the beginning of my healing journey in a way. And the beginning of taking responsibility for myself and accepting myself and accepting my past and accepting the things I'd done. And that was the first decisive moment in the journey. And then after that, we were staying at our friend's house. He was my ex-partner's best friend and someone I cared for really deeply. And he was also a heroin addict. And he was still living with his parents. His mom had pretty intense health issues, borderline personality disorder, and bipolar. And so the situation there was very unstable. We never knew, if she was going to be in a good mood or not. And one day she completely lost her mind and kicked us out. So we were in the street like that. Overnight, and I managed to find us a place to stay for just for the weekend. We had 2 nights at a friend's house, and then we had nowhere to go and no money to pay for anything. And it was that at that point where we kind of burned all the bridges. I mean, we had a tiny bit of money saved up that could afford us like a room and a house share or like a few nights in a hostel or something like that. But it was like it really wasn't a lot. And was that moment where I don't know what happened in my mind, but I was like, I'm gonna make it work. I can't give up now. I'm gonna make it work somehow. She had lost hope that anything was possible. And it was on me. I was like, we can't be in the street. We can't, like, this can't be happening. And I somehow found us a room to rent and a house share in like a day and a half. I spent like 10 hours on Spare Room, which is one of the websites here in the UK. Found us a place to stay, which was kind of dodgy, but It was a roof over our head. And then obviously we only had, I say we, but it was really mostly me. It was just 1 month of rent and put it all down into that room. And I was like, okay, I need to figure something out now. Because after that, we were burned, you know? And made the very weird decision that I would find a job that would be conducive to me taking care of myself. And I made it happen. And it all started from there. I started realizing if I take responsibility for my life and myself and I stop just being the victim, then I can make things happen. And that was the first moment when I started to realize my power. And I was like, okay, this is working, so I need to keep going that way. That was the second moment. The first moment was the rock bottom, or I couldn't take it anymore. It was either I do something or I'm gonna die, or I have no reasons to live, so I need to create some reasons to live. And then the second one was, shit, I actually have some power over my reality. Yeah.
And how soon after that did you break up with your ex-partner?
We actually broke up during COVID lockdown. So that was a little bit over 2 years after that, that we broke up. We still stayed together. She was holding on to me because I started making money. And it was very convenient for her because I was, you know, paying for a room and everything. And then we went through COVID together in a studio flat. And that's when things got very, very worse. And she actually broke up with me. One day she did something that was very abusive, and I left the home. I was like, I need to go out because I can't take this right now. And when I came back, she told me, I've been abusive to you. I need to let you go. I do believe she went on her own journey of, you know, healing. But then after that, we weren't in a relationship, but she was still living in the same flat. And even though she was not paying any rent, she was like, my name is on the lease, so I have a right to be here. And she was still being abusive. And yeah, so she stayed in the flat for another 2 or 3 months after we'd broken up. And in that time, during the COVID lockdown, obviously it was very hard to find a place to live as well. And her best friend, the one we'd stayed with, overdosed and passed away, which in a weird way brought us closer again. And we were kind of supporting each other through that. It was just a very weird, confusing, hard time. And I had to eventually like almost get the police involved and get a what is it called? A restricting order.
Restraining order,
Yeah.
restraining order,
Against her for her to leave. It didn't get to that, but I did reach out to a charity who helped me with legal advice and what I could do. And I had to tell her, look, this is what's going to happen. Either you go find a place and you leave, or this is what's happening next. Because I realized I couldn't keep enabling her behavior towards me.
And where are you now? Like, just tell people where you are at now in life.
Where am I now? I am deep into my healing and empowerment journey. I have found my purpose in life, which is to help others grow and heal and live a life beyond their wildest dreams, which sounds so silly, but I remember I laughed when I went to AA and they would tell me, you know, if you stay on this journey, if you stay on this path of healing and growth, you will live a life beyond your wildest dreams. And I was like, this sounds so cheesy. This is cringy. And yeah, right. It actually happened. I started my business, Healographic. I trained in holistic life coaching and NLP, neuro-linguistic programming, hypnosis, past lives and timeline regression, and tarot readings. I've accepted my intuitive and highly sensitive side. I have taken so much learning and power from my past and all my challenges, and alchemizing all of those into helping other people build resilience and build a life they don't need to escape from. I've found love again. I'm in the best relationship I could have even ever imagined. I moved into my dream apartment in London this year, and I've reconnected with all my family, even the ones I was separated from a very young age. I have a very healthy relationship with my parents. Weirdly, they are even getting inspired by my healing journey at times. They don't know all of it, but it's crazy. Last weekend, we had a Zoom call. My parents live in France still. But last weekend, we had a Zoom call, and my mom has started seeing an osteopath for like her issues, and osteopaths are very holistic in their approach. And she was telling me, oh yeah, she told me to do this type of breathing. And I was like, oh, is it box breathing? And she was like, oh yeah, I don't remember how to do it. And so I led both my parents through a box breathing exercise on Zoom, which to me is like, never thought that would happen in a million years. That my parents would become like more open to healing and growth and like spirituality. And I have found more peace and grounding than I've ever had in my life. I'm accepting myself more and more every day. Still healing. I have more resilience than I've ever even thought possible. I've become this unstoppable woman. Like, I'm not the most successful person, like if you compare it to obviously what else is going on in the world, but I've gotten to a point where like no matter what gets in my way, I just don't stop anymore. I don't give up, which to me is so like, it's unbelievable. If my past self from 5 years ago would look at me right now, she would be like, how the fuck? Yeah, I'm building a community and like connections with amazing people, friendships like I never even thought possible. And meeting amazing women like you as well, which is such a blessing. Yeah, I'm good.
That is incredible. And then, if you're watching the video, you can obviously see you light up. But if you're not watching the video, if you're just listening to the podcast, you should have seen that. I had goosebumps when she was just lighting up, speaking about where she is at now, and just I almost cried. It felt so amazing, and it feels so amazing to see you where you are now, and to really feel that peace that is emanating from you, and that resilience that we both know it takes to just keep on going. So let's talk about that quickly. So I want you to, looking back, right, to your past 5 years, what would be the three most important things that you would share with people, the three most important lessons that you would share with people?
Ooh, okay. The first one that really pissed me off at the beginning is you are responsible for your reality. And the first time I heard this, and I was like, I'm responsible for being abused. I'm responsible for my traumas, what the fuck? This is victim blaming. That pissed me off. That made me so angry. And then I realized on the other side of it, this is the most empowering mindset one can ever have, because when you are responsible for your life, it means you can change it. It means you aren't a victim. You know, it's this idea, you're not a victim, you're a survivor. More than a survivor, you're a creator. You know, people say life doesn't happen to you, it happens for you. I believe life happens from you. You know, your reality is a reflection of what's going on in your mind. You're the creator of your reality. Your reality, your relationships are a big mirror to the way you are and the way you be and the way you treat yourself and the way you experience reality, what you believe, what you value. And if I take the example of my abusive relationship, I felt like the victim the whole time of it. And then, you know, in order to be a victim, you have to play the victim. It stings, right? It's so uncomfortable to say, because you are allowing someone else, you are enabling someone else to treat you the way they do. And it's hard to remember your power in those moments, because they've burnt it to the ground. They
Have they, or
slowly,
have you?
slowly. Well, yeah, exactly. But you know, you forget who you are, because you get so used to being small. You get so used to being controlled. You get so used to existing for someone else. But you're not just a victim, ever. So long as you decide to stop playing the victim. And that was, oh, that one took some time to sink in. And it still stings sometimes, because you're like, fuck, I created some of this trauma. I allowed myself to stay in the situations. I abandoned myself in those moments. I allowed myself to be so small that people could step all over me. And it's a very painful realization, but at the same time, the most empowering, because if you could make yourself small, it means you can also make yourself big. So taking responsibility for yourself and your life was the first realization. In every moment, if you observe what part you're playing, you have some power over your life, over your circumstances. That also means You start playing the blame game. You know, yeah, other people can hurt you and, you know, do messed up things, but you can't change that. You can't change other people. The only thing in the world you have 100% control over is yourself. So stop playing the blame game. If you don't like where you are, move. You're not a tree. That was the first one. The second one, which is in some form related, is it comes from the inside. It all comes from the inside first. When I made that decision to take care of myself through everything I was doing, my life expanded and changed and transformed and improved at lightning speed, all because I was focusing on what was going on within me. I worked on my mindset, on my mental health, taking care of my body as much as I knew how to back then. You know, it's always a work in progress. We always learn, we always grow. That's the second one that I guess goes with taking responsibility, is it comes from inside. If you try to only change your environment, or if you try to change other people, if you try to change your job or where you live or whatever that is without working on what's going on in your inner world, then you're going to end up in the same place again, not physically, but emotionally, mentally. You know, creating the same toxic relationships, creating the same toxic environments. So working from within. And then the third one is accepting that life is a constant journey of growth and healing. And that happiness isn't an end goal, but a feeling that you can choose to feel every single day, just like every other emotions. It's not like I've arrived. There is no goal that will make you happy for the rest of your life. Life is a constant journey of growth and healing and learning. And like we've never just arrived. Unless maybe when we've arrived to the grave, but even then we keep growing as a soul. And with that brings acceptance of the lows that go with the high and the challenges, knowing that you grow the most through the challenges. I think that would be it. The three lessons.
Beautiful. I love it. And so here's a concept that right now is like really getting to me, and I want to hear your thoughts on this. So as we manifest, as we create what we want, right? So we create our life. It starts from the inside, and we manifest our physical reality, truth. How much of manifestation would you say is wanting to control, needing to control the outcome, because then we know what will happen in a way? And how much would you say, okay, I actually do listen to my intuition and I don't care about the outcome because I know when I listen to my intuition, it's going to be what's best for it's for everyone's highest good. What are your thoughts on that?
Okay, so two things come to mind. First of all, I don't think manifestation is a question of control. Because weirdly enough, I don't think when you have this need for control, it stems from a place of fear, from a place of lack, and it doesn't quite work. So I like to see manifestation as This is what I desire, and it will be this or something better. And then the second thought is, one of my mentors always says this, you get what you expect, not what you want. Shoshana Raven, who connected us. And that is so true. And sometimes you're not in control of what you expect if it stems from a subconscious limiting belief, but yet you're creating it into your reality. Especially if you've learned to be treated and loved in a certain way, you keep getting that, even though that's not necessarily what you want. There's a disconnect, a subconscious conflict. And weirdly enough, the need for control often comes when that happens, when there's a disconnect and a conflict in the subconscious, because you keep experiencing what you don't want, but what you subconsciously expect. And then you're like, oh, I need this to be different. And you're coming at it from a place of fear instead of trust, instead of, the intuitive hit. I don't know if that answers your
Yeah.
question or if I
No,
went on.
I love the perspective. Like I'm always loving to hear everyone's perspective on this. So this is great, actually. This is beautiful. So let people know where they can find you if they want to connect with you, and let them know also if you have a freebie or something they can sign up for and that is going to help them.
Yeah, of course. So you can find me mostly on Instagram at Healographic, which is a play on word between heal from healing and holographic. But you'll have it in the show notes, I'm assuming, because it's kind of a weird one to
You
spell.
will. You will.
Yeah. And healographic.com, which is my website, where you can find some free resources. And since we've talked a lot about resilience, I actually have a free ebook workbook hybrid called Resilient Rising that is designed to help you through your difficult times and your challenges to learn and grow and overcome them and get inspired to never give up on your dreams and yourself, no matter what you're going through. I hi highly recommend that, especially if you have a three line in your human design. This is for you.
Oh yeah, we know all about that. And I think that's gonna need to be a different episode. Okay, amazing, Mel. Thank you so much for joining the podcast. Appreciate you being here. Thank you so much for your time and your wisdom. And yeah, I wish you so much more success and love and health and happiness and everything that you expect.
Well, thank you so much for having me. It was vulnerable sharing, but I'm so grateful we connected. Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
Love this episode of Mind Your Subconscious? Subscribe, rate, and leave a review on whichever platform you're listening. It's very much appreciated. Thank you so much.